Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. I am continuing with the discussion of Erik Erikson's 8-stage model for psychosocial development by reviewing how I apply the first 5 stages in therapy with children. In this episode, I'm going to review stage 3, which runs from about ages 3 to 5 years old, and Erikson termed this stage initiative versus guilt. So the first thing is to reframe the language of the stage into something I understand and actually see when working with children. Initiative. How does a 3 to 5-year-old show initiative? And how do they display guilt? To me, initiative at this stage of life is often that little streak of independence that sets one off into trying new things. Emotionally, the nervous system is continuing to gain in the ability to function on its own, and this starts some experiments of sorts, where the child is growing in their confidence with their newfound capacity to separate and move away from the caregivers. And now that the physical ability to move away is established, then the curiosity sets in of what actually happens out here in the world and what can the child do to influence different outcomes. Guilt now is different from the shame in the earlier stage because children seem to understand more their separateness from others. And they can distinguish the difference between doing something bad in this stage as opposed to overall being bad earlier. It is very subtle, but psychologically, it is a major milestone in emotional development to make this distinction. Because doing something bad can be repaired. It can be fixed and forgiven. Social relationships need this ability to be fixed and have things be forgiven. And once the bad thing is a thing that's between the people in the relationship, it can be repaired. This sets the child up for an easier ability to interact with others as they mature. They can take this independence, move throughout the world, and also reach out for help when they inevitably find themselves in need of assistance. This is one of my favorite stages to work with children. They are just starting to come into confidence with speaking as well, and they can say anything. I have been called many funny things, and children are super honest at this stage. Snacks at your office do not taste good. There will be no mincing words here. Weird smell or something unusual happening today in your office? Patients at this age will be the first to notice it and tell you. The way I think about it is they have just realized that people listen and are often affected by what they say, as opposed to babbling and things in the previous stages. Now others react to what comes out. So the interest in determining how to make that happen, like how to say things that make people respond, is intense. So they are likely to say all kinds of things as they experiment here. To me, this is the stage before social learning of what is, quote, supposed to be said starts to take hold. So it's one of my favorite stages from a therapy perspective because the honesty is so clear and on the surface. And at this age, confidence, which I'm interchangeably using with initiative, is important because that is what I see as the goal of this stage for children. Initiative versus guilt. To me, this is the pre-stage to what will later be launch phases in late teenage and early adult years. The child, as far as we understand from a psychological perspective, is just starting to realize themselves as a unique being. This brings up all kinds of questions and curiosities, but the main thing it drives is an awareness that some choices are now independent ones. Sure, many things like food, where and when they go places, and overall what the family does are still up to the adults, but little choices, how one holds the utensils during eating, how one listens and speaks to others, how one walks, these little choices start amounting to an awareness of independence. Personal choice starts to be available, and along with it, personalities start to be revealed. So as therapists who work with children, the major treatment goals are always worked out and assessed in discussion with caregivers. Sometimes, as in earlier stages, working with children at this stage is about helping them regulate moods. And sadly, there might be some trauma that they've experienced, which is what brings them to therapy. In all of these cases, learning to express the emotions are usually part of the treatment. As I've mentioned before, Anna Freud explained that the therapist must be, quote, familiar with the normal sequence of child development for treatment to be successful. So what is normal at this stage of development? This stage encompasses the transition from living solely with their family to going out into the world. By the end of this stage, children will likely be entering grade school. So this stage is about the inner world of home and the outer world of school and other adults and other kids. So now I do start to work independently with children, more on the upper end of this age range, and always in tandem with caregivers. But play therapy can begin here as the ability and interest in social play is developing along with their imaginations. For me, most therapy goals include developing the skills for mood regulation, and this involves play therapy that has things that are unpredictable. Sometimes everything works and everyone is happy, and sometimes nothing works and people are mad or sad or both. Letting all those things exist in my office, along with displaying my own tolerance for not getting worked up about the bad tasting snacks and the weird smell I've just been told about, are ways that through that social learning from Bandura I mentioned in episode 17, in these ways I can support my patient in following suit and developing an ability to tolerate ups and downs. Also, it's counterintuitive, that is, most people think it would be the opposite, but one of the things that helps the most at this stage is to help the child start to name emotions. So if a toy does break or a game does not go as planned, and they do become mad or sad, which is normal, then helping them find words to express that actually helps moods regulate, and it helps them express themselves more fully if they can find words to match their inner experiences. The way I think about it is that naming the emotion helps make a place for it. A lot of times, adults tell children they don't feel a certain way when they clearly do. For example, telling a crying child that they are happy. From the child's perspective, I think it is confusing as you're trying to figure out the world. It's kind of like, okay, so when I'm smiling and laughing and the adults just said I was happy, okay, that was happy. But then wait, I just tripped on the sidewalk. It hurts now, so I am crying and they are still telling me I am happy. So what is happy exactly then? As a therapist, if you meet one of us who works with children, you will see us start to name emotions. I try to name things that the family uses, you know, the words that they use for these emotions, but some therapists even have charts with all the emotions labeled. Sometimes people get concerned that we are telling the child to feel different things. For me, I feel like we are giving them a place for all those emotions that are bursting out of them, and we're giving those emotions a place to help land. Take the child who is trying to figure out what to do with a skinned knee from falling on the sidewalk. The first instinct is to cry because it hurts. If they hear that they are happy, then it is confusing because happy also meant smiling and laughing, but they don't feel like doing either of those things right now because their knee still hurts. So if they have a place for all those emotions to be contained, like a word that describes their experience, such as sad or even ouch, then at least the pressure of navigating the confusion of why happy would mean so many different things is put to rest, and they can get back to focus on their knee feeling better. It's like a relief. And if we're honest, I think most of us as adults have a similar sense of relief when we get to just be ourselves and feel the feelings as they come. I think of it like being at the ocean. Sometimes you wade in and the tide is going out. Okay, totally calm. Great. In fact, I'm a little more confident. I'll even try to swim a bit. Then the tide changes and you stand there trying to assess these waves that are getting bigger all of a sudden. And inevitably you're toppled over by one of them, which is hard enough. But if you continue to tell yourself you weren't toppled over by the wave, you will not usually stand back upright as quickly as you would if you just assess what just happened. I just got toppled by a wave. Now I got to figure out how to stand back up. It's like the relief of understanding what just happened is solved, and now I can address it, instead of just trying to convince myself that the tide's still going out when it's clearly coming in and waves are going to keep toppling me if I don't do something about it. Working with children this age is kind of like that. Emotions shift really quickly, and they actually, children do fall a lot in this age. So side note, you want to arrange your office and put some things that are soft on the floor and move like hard edge corners away as much as possible. But the point is to see what you can do to support the child in assessing things as they are, and then being ready for what will happen next. Because that's the one thing about emotions. They, kind of like water, change a lot, and they need freedom to move. The more we try to grip them and act like what just happened didn't happen, the more elusive and overwhelming the emotions become. So what am I observing in this stage to make my assessment? Well, we are building off of the rapprochement from the earlier stage too, and we want to see where things are at now. Is the child able to freely move away from the caregiver and freely come back? Both physically and emotionally, humans need the ability to move toward and have independence from other humans. This ability will be needed throughout our whole lives, and it starts to become conscious at this stage. So what are we hoping to do here? Well, we want to assess which parts of this ability need help in developing. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, sometimes I refer out to the animal kingdom when I need help understanding humans. Pat Parelli teaches something called natural horsemanship, which is the idea that if we consider the horse's natural tendencies while we're trying to train them, then what we are asking them to do can be put in their understanding and we can have a better relationship with them. As I make sense of it, the idea of natural horsemanship is that working with horses is about learning how horses interact with each other without humans, like just a group of horses. What would they do to communicate across their group when they need to teach one of the horses something? So if we can figure out how they communicate with each other, then we can communicate with them in their language, so to speak, and we can have a much better and stronger relationship. After observing horses for many years, Parelli noticed that they play games with each other in order to do this, as part of being a social creature in a herd. We saw this with Mark Beckoff's discussion of wolves and dogs that I introduced in episode 8. Social creatures teach each other the cultural practices of the group with play, usually. One of those games that applies here is something Parelli calls the yo-yo game. And what I remember learning about what he says here is that when you're training your horse, you want to see the horse's ability to move away from you be in a similar fashion to the coming back. And that ideally this is as easy and flowing as a yo-yo on a string. For me, I've never been too good at getting a yo-yo to go up and down very easily. But the idea or the goal would be a smooth flow. Horses go away and they come back. So as horse people, we have a similar goal that we want our horse to come near us at times and at other times go away. And I think about that when I watch pairs of children and caregivers. I'm watching that invisible string between them. Is there flexibility in it? Can it be pulled to the edges and then return? Can it flow smoothly back and forth? As in the previous stage, I'm going to set my office up so that the child has some room to move. They are likely going to be moving quite a bit now, so little play areas in different corners of the office are helpful. And I'm curious to see how they move to the different areas. Are they displaying some confidence? In our culture, it is common to overdo it with the encouragement on confidence, and the child gets really praised for being out there and doing things on their own. But ideally, we want to see a bond between them and the caregiver that can also sustain some requests for support. The world is still a huge place for this little person, and they are going to need help. Are they able to recognize when they need help, and are they able to ask for it? I'm always curious what is happening with the eye contact between caregiver and child. Are they still checking in with each other? That invisible thread that links them together can sustain some distance now, and the eye contact as well as voice contact are ways it can stay connected over a wider amount of space. So if you see the child walking into your office for the first time and checking out each corner of the space while also referring back to the caregiver with either eye contact or voice contact or both, then you are observing that link between them. Voice contact across space at this age is going to sound like reflections of what they find in your office. Say you have some toys on the floor for them to explore. They might pick each one up and exclaim things like, "Oh," and "Wow." And when you hear the caregiver look up from the paperwork or whatever you've asked them to do and reply with things like, "Oh," and "Wow," you know that this pair is in sync with each other. These little check-ins are hard to notice at first because they're so common. But once you realize them, they are very noticeable. In the first few times of meeting a child at this age, I mainly just observe these interactions. Eventually, as they notice the comfort their caregiver has with me, they will increasingly be able to be comfortable with me working in therapy independently. But I wait to work independently with children until they have seen their caregiver interact with me for a while. And it depends on therapy goals at this stage. In these first few sessions, I mainly just intervene on safety concerns, like if the child wants to leave the office altogether and start walking down the hall on their own, then I would stop them. Overall, watching this yo-yo string go out and come back is how I determine where I'm going to support this child. Are we going to work on the confidence to move away from caregivers without guilt? Or are we going to work on the confidence to return and ask for help without guilt? A lot of times I'm working with children in these age ranges because there has been some type of trauma too. So then it is play therapy techniques that help to see how the child makes sense of and expresses the associated emotions. And again, we are still in an age range where one of the best supports I can provide the child is to provide support for their caregiver. It is my responsibility to listen to things about home and experiences at school. And if I pick up on something like any stressors that can be supported, maybe I'm aware of community offerings or other supports the caregiver could use as resources. One thing that works for me to support a child in this age range, and for all people for that matter, is to always be considering what their world is like. Always kind of be putting myself in their shoes, if you will. At this time of year, for example, one way I do that is to remind myself that the holidays have started. And this always invokes a lot of stress about how we planned it would go and how it is actually going. I think we can all empathize there. Caregivers usually want to provide a fun and meaningful season. So there might be extra unstated pressures right now at home. And as routines change dramatically in a few weeks when schools let out for holiday break, that pressure is going to be more intensified. Being thoughtful about these things and noticing them and verbalizing them with children and with their caregivers is one way to help alleviate the stress on the overall system for your child patient. Being aware of and recommending additional resources for support, when appropriate, can also be helpful. Many community agencies will sponsor what might be called giving trees or other ways that families in need can provide more gifts or food to little ones. These supports and others are resources that help caregivers feel more confident. And humans are still very much in the social learning stages at this age range, meaning that when caregivers feel confident, that extends to your child patient as well. I'm wishing all of you a meaningful and happy holiday season. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.